I still end up investing a lot of my time and a lot of my money and my clients' money in North America. Just for the simple fact that America is the biggest economy in the world, and it will continue to be the biggest economy. It is the most energetic economy as well. And I know China is something I love in many ways, but America is still America. I think as far as the general market is concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if the market continues to improve over the next year or two, just because Trump is going to remove regulation, and removal of unnecessary regulation reduces the cost of doing business, which means that profitability of companies improves.
Good morning to you, Jayant. How are you?
I'm very well, Andy. Good morning to you too. How are you?
Doing good. It's good evening to me here. I'm in Atlanta and you're over in Asia here. So
right.
Again, thank you enough for making the time for me. I really enjoyed our previous discussions. And really what I'd like to do here is get a year-end review, if you would. And then let's talk about, we've talked about so many things from investments to culture to where investors need to look. But let's start with, a year-end review. And then we'll talk a little bit about the election and what it means for culture and what it means for your portfolio, just your two cents.
Well, Andy, elections and the year in review are the same thing, pretty much. We are headed for probably one of the most entertaining government cycle in human history. Next year will be an extremely interesting experience, unless you get caught up, get troubled by the deportation czars. This next year is going to be a very interesting time. I think there will be a lot of chaos and a lot of good chaos. I quite like what Trump has selected as his partners in the cabinet in general. And I think a lot of people cherry pick on what they don't like about his cabinet. And no one is going to be satisfied with everything he does. The fact remains that we have to always think in terms of whether this is going to be an improvement or a worsening of the situation. So from that perspective, I think we are headed for a good time, a good 4 years. It will be very chaotic. There will be a lot of interpersonal rivalry between the people in the cabinet. Many people will get sacked by Trump. People will then come out and bitch against Trump. So there will be all those kind of things. But this will be a massive, massive improvement for the politics of the U.S., but it is going to realign the world in the right direction. Right direction in the sense that a lot of people who were starting to take liberties with the U.S. will start to rethink about it. So from whatever I hear, and I know I'm listening probably to my echo chamber in the right-wing conservative movement, but it seems that Iran and Russia and Ukraine are probably all going to rethink about the ongoing troubles that they are either on the receiving end or are creating. So I think we are in for an interesting time. It will be a good time. Next year will be a good year for humanity.
So let's work that out a little bit more in two ways. Number one is we talked a lot about woke politics in the past. Do you see this as an end or a coming of an end to woke politics, number one? And then secondly, an interestingly good time for investors. Work that out for me a little bit more. What should investors be looking for to seek value?
Investors is something very different. When we think about investors, we are often thinking about the stock market. Now, the stock market can underperform while the economy actually does well. So there are all kinds of factors in underpinning an economy that affects the stock market. So we can elaborate on it a bit. About woke politics, Andy, this is going to suffer a lot over the next few years because Trump will come heavy on against woke politics. But remember, this is not going away. The Trump is only a short-term solution to the problems of the U.S. The medium-term and long-term problems of the U.S. are baked in the cake. Here is the problem, Andy. 50% of Americans under the age of 24 are of non-European ethnicity. And if you look at the voting pattern of these people, they primarily vote for the leftist and woke policies. Now, I know that, for example, Latinos might not like much of woke policies, but the intention, the voting pattern is still leftist. So in the medium and long term, the U.S. is going to drift into the leftist arena, whatever you do over the next 4 years. So this is baked in the cake. All that Trump will achieve over the next 4 years is to delay degradation of the U.S. by a few more years, maybe 8 years or maybe 7 years. But he is not going to achieve anything more than that. Now, if you look at how the popular vote in the United States, this is, ironically, strangely, the first time that a Republican president has won the popular vote since 1988. Except if you ignore the wartime presidency election of George Bush Jr., this is the first time popular vote has gone into the hands of the Republican. Demographically, if you look closely what happens, it is the people of European ethnicity who vote for the Republican Party. They are the only people, a big chunk of the population, a significant chunk of the population that votes for Western values, the conservative values, the Christian values. And that is becoming a minority as time passes by. And this is baked in the cake. So in the medium and long term, degradation of the U.S. will continue. But the next 4 years will be very interesting because Trump will bring energy back into the United States. The rest of the world will start looking up to the U.S. as the leader of the world, which it should be, which it is, and it will continue to be for the next many years. But again, in the medium and long term, the degradation of the U.S. is baked in the cake because we are too politically correct and we have compromised too much by bringing in people who have the wrong values.
Got it. Okay, so what should investors really look for when they're looking to find value now that Trump is elected? Should they be investing money here in the U.S. or should they be looking abroad? And I know you're very active investing in Asia, both Japan and China. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, I do invest in Japan and China and Korea and Singapore and Hong Kong. And they are fabulous markets because they give me the medium and long-term stability that I'm looking for. But I still end up investing a lot of my time and a lot of my money and my clients' money in North America. Just for the simple fact that America is the biggest economy in the world, and it will continue to be the biggest economy. It is the most energetic economy as well. And I know China is something I love in many ways, but America is still America. I think as far as the general market is concerned, I wouldn't be surprised if the market continues to improve over the next year or two, just because Trump is going to remove regulation, and removal of unnecessary regulation reduces the cost of doing business, which means that profitability of companies improves. And if profitability of companies does not improve, at least it leaves more money in the pockets of the citizens, which means that there's a broadening of the economy that will take place. So we are looking forward to a good time for the U.S. for the next couple of years. My guess is that this administration will also not be as anti-China as the last Trump administration was or as Biden administration has been. And the reason is that I think Elon Musk will be a positive change in thinking more internationally in a balanced way for the Trump administration. This is the problem, Andy, I have often seen with Americans. They are they have the Enlightenment values, but they erroneously believe that the world also has the same Enlightenment values. Now, when they want to enforce those enlightenment values on the on other people in the world, it leads to massive problems, as it did in Libya or Afghanistan or Iraq. But also an understanding that different people can be very different. It might be, you know, we are from Mars and they are from Venus. An understanding of that helps us interact with the other people in a meaningful way. But when you live and let live, you let those people live the way that they prefer to live. Once you have that kind of thinking, which is the thinking that I assume Elon Musk is going to bring in, because he has South African connection, he has invested around the world, and he has a big operation in China, he's probably going to tell the Trump administration, hey, listen, we don't have to be in an adversarial relationship with China. We can enter into a win-win relationship. And now, Andy, I spend a lot of time in Hong Kong and Japan and China, although I spent most of my time in the United States. The fact remains that these people in East Asia are focused on economic growth. They don't want wars. They don't want this contest for the world superpower. I don't think China is interested in becoming the next superpower. But you don't want to agitate China unnecessarily on Hong Kong or Taiwan or whatever else, because then you will have China rebelling against you by creating problems in South China Sea or picking up on some small island somewhere in the middle of the ocean just for the sake of creating trouble again for the United States. So I think Elon Musk is probably going to temper the situation with China. And clearly, I think most of us probably have come to accept that the Russia-Ukraine war is probably going to come under control because of Trump. No one knows what where Israel and Gaza thing will go, but at least a lot of wars will end. And this unnecessary transaction cost that humanity is suffering from because of the conflict between China and the U.S., conflict between Russia and the U.S. will probably come under control, and we should look forward to better times for humanity for the next couple of years. I don't necessarily know how it will work out in the stock market. The reason is that there will be realignment. When peace comes, maybe more businesses will flow back to the U.S., which might mean Chinese companies might suffer. So there are so many factors underpinning economies that things will be in turmoil. My view is that I don't care about it because I don't invest in ETFs or S&P 500 indexes. I invest in specific companies in which I'm looking for value. So as long as I'm focused on that, I hope will continue to do well.
Got it. I want to revisit that if we can pin that thought there for a second, specific companies. But let me ask you, what does this mean, though? Because as you mentioned, and as I know, you invest in the U.S., but also specifically all over Asia. Trump is talking about slapping on tariffs, high tariffs on China. Do you think that will happen? And what's the impact on the Chinese economy just by talking about it, or if he does, in fact, do that?
Yeah, I don't know how it will play out. What Trump says and what he will actually do are two different things. China has grown far too much, Andy. Just about everything we use today comes from China. Yeah. You are not going to set up factories to manufacture all those things in the United States over the next 4 years. Setting up operations, bringing production back to the U.S. is a cycle that would take 5, 10, 15 years. This is not an easy job to do. And, you know, once you have invested in a country, you can't really shut down operations, move the machines overseas to another country. That isn't an economically viable possibility. We should never have thrown out manufacturing from the United States. But now that we have done so, it will take a while to bring that manufacturing back to the US. Now, if you impose too much tariff against Chinese companies, where are you going to go get those products from? They will either come to the United States via some other country. As is happening with oil in case of Europe, the same Russian oil is actually going to Europe, but via some other countries because of sanctions. So, you know, I don't know how it will play out, but it is not easy for Trump to impose too much of restrictions on import from China, because it will hurt the pockets of users in America. But then at the same time, if he manages to reduce income tax, then maybe they will have more money to pay extra taxes for import duty. Now, I am not so much against import duty as I am against taxes. Now, of course, I'm choosing lesser of the two evils. Switzerland and Iceland actually impose quite a bit of duty, from what I understand, on imports, so that their domestic economies and domestic people do better. So I think it's not a bad idea. It's not the worst idea, because it's still one of the two evils. But I still think Trump will reinvigorate the economy rather than destroy it. You and I are not going to agree 100% with everything he does. I'm just overall, I'm looking forward to his administration. I don't want this boring Biden-Harris way of virtue signaling, which has been destroying the American society and American economy.
Got it. So what does this mean for the BRICS? I know there's a lot of talk of the BRICS coming out with the new currency that would rival the U.S. dollar, or just a lot of competition business-wise with the U.S. economy. Now that the Trump administration is going to be in charge and deregulate, do you see the BRICS any longer as a threat to the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar?
Well, the history of BRICS is very strange. BRICS is not an organization. It is an organization created by Goldman Sachs analyst who coined this word to promote a product in the market. And you see this, Andy, we operate in the capital market. This happens all the time. So you just want to make a seductive product that people get attracted towards, and then hope that you make some money out of it. That's what Goldman Sachs, in my view, did. But that does not mean this is a natural organization. This is not even an arranged marriage. This is just two random people who went on blind date and decided that they were going to be together because there was no one else. And it was a relationship organized by someone else. Now, these people hate each other. They don't talk with each other. They hate each other. They backstab each other. So BRICS has no significance, in my view. The only country of significance, or maybe two countries of significance in BRICS, are Russia and China. But Andy, the funny thing is that Russia and China work well together anyway. They don't need an international organization. So this whole thing about BRICS currency is just makes no sense to me. And I know there's a lot of euphoria to do with this so-called currency coming into the market. But what is this currency going to be backed by? It will be yuan at the end of the day anyway. There's no other currency in among the BRICS countries. South Africa is going down the drain. It is getting worse by the day. Brazil is a non-entity. India is a non-entity. So the only two countries that matter are China and Russia. Now, here is my guess, Andy, why China is promoting BRICS. Chinese and other East Asians are not very extrovert people necessarily. They don't like to be they don't like to be too visible. They just want to silently work towards their own progress. And I think China probably thought, hey, let's have BRICS as the facade, while most of the work that BRICS does is actually going to be done by China anyway. So I think BRICS is nothing but a facade for camouflage of China, nothing else, from what I see. The U.S. dollar is here to stay. There is no alternative to U.S. dollar for the next 10, 20 years, despite the fact that U.S. will continue to degrade once Trump is out of the office. And this is the last time Republican Party is in power in the current form. So I think BRICS has no significance in my mind whatsoever. The last thing, Andy, is that Chinese currency is not an internationally freely tradable currency. If I want to transfer money from outside China into China, it's a nightmare. I tell you, it is a complete nightmare transferring money to China. I have tried it, it just costs you too much money, too much of bureaucracy. China makes it very, very difficult to move money in. Imagine how much more difficult it would be to move money out of China. So the fact remains that China is not prepared to internationalize its currency. There's no way you can create a tradable currency on the back of currencies which are non-tradable and very restrictive.
So where does gold play in all of this equation? Is it something you still like in all of this, even though that Trump is more or less going to be a tailwind, if you would, the wind's going to be at the back of the U.S. sales as far as the economy is concerned, and we're looking at a firming dollar. Do you still like gold?
Well, I would not dump gold in any way whatsoever. Remember that because Trump is going to focus more on America, a lot of other countries which have been getting free stuff from the U.S. will get into trouble.
So
several of the emerging market currencies, sorry, not emerging markets, the third world hellhole currencies fell after Trump won the election, which clearly means that the market understands that Trump's returning back to power will be bad for these third world currencies and third world economies. So these third world rich people will continue to buy gold because they really have limited options. And I know more about India than about other third world people because these are very secretive issues. But a lot of money has been flowing out of third world countries. They know that the third world is going to be in a worse situation because of Trump than without Trump. Very fairly as well, Andy, your and my tax money shouldn't be going into supporting the fragile third world countries. So gold will stay there. Also, China will continue to buy gold. So when I drive around in China, there are literally jungles of empty apartment buildings. You would see a jungle of 100,000 people apartment buildings, which are completely empty. Now, these people, Chinese have understood that they can no longer hope to buy properties and flip them, those properties, for a 50% profit. So they have to reorient how they invest their money. Now, for a Chinese to invest in the stock market or elsewhere is not that easy. Remember, it's a second world country. It's a very new country. It has only recently emerged from communism. I know they are still call themselves a communist country, but they are not a communist country. There are not really many avenues for Chinese to invest. They don't really invest in the stock market much because for them, the stock market is a casino. They don't really understand the valuations. And so many of Chinese companies trade at values that I don't really understand. So for a lot of Chinese, gold remains a way to preserve their net worth. So now you see that the third world and China will continue to buy gold. But also in the medium and long term, the West is fried. The West is gone because of demographic problem. Once Trump administration is out, the degradation of the U.S. will pick up very rapidly. Canada is degrading very rapidly. Australia is degrading very rapidly. And without the U.S., the spine of the Western society will go away. And as you can see, the fact is that the whole of the Western civilization, I'm talking about Europe, West European countries and the associated countries, America, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, will have European ethnicity as a minority within the next couple of decades. So the degradation of the West is baked in the cake, and the chaos from this will continue to emerge once Trump is out. So people should stay invested in gold, and I think their interest will emerge with a bull cycle once the Trump administration is out 4 or 5 years from now.
How about the rest of commodities? Do you see good value in energy here? Because energy is sold off pretty, and even the equities. I mean, we've had a bounce in the equities a little bit, but talk to me about energy, and also talk to me about industrial metals or agriculture. Are you looking at any plays in those commodities?
So, Andy, I really don't like to speculate much on commodities. The fact remains that, yes, demand could be going up, but how much do you really know about the supply? Is the supply going up or going down? The situation is that we consume almost twice as much of virtually every commodity you can think of, twice as much compared to what we used to 20 years back. So the consumption of every commodity has continued to increase over the last two decades. However, the supply has increased faster than demand. And as a result, the prices haven't really gone up as we thought they would. Now, had we restrained the commodity investors, the people in mining restrained their greed, they would not have given away their investment money so easily to companies, which would have meant not so many mines would have come into production, which would have meant that we would have actually benefited from increase in demand. So it is hard to understand where the commodity prices will go, given that there's a supply situation as well. You can't just look at demand. My guess is that because the world economy will improve for the next few years, the consumption, the demand for commodities will improve as well. But at the same time, I would not be surprised if supply improves as well. Because you see, American government will start giving permits more easily over the next few years. So maybe supply will kick in faster as well. So that is the situation with commodities. I would not bet too much on commodities. However, I think there will be a reorientation about the what is called sustainable energy. The sanity will return back to the energy consumption, because we know that we are destroying Western economies by restricting consumption of fossil fuels. So fossil fuel consumption should go up. And my way to invest in fossil fuels is to pay attention to coal, because coal is very underinvested. Underinvested in the sense that a lot of empty suits, which are the funds, fund managers, institutional investors, they shamelessly use electricity produced by coal, but they don't like to keep stocks of coal, which means that a lot of coal companies are cheaping at a huge discount to their inherent value.
I'm glad you said that. I've had Matt Warder on a few times. I don't know if you know Matt, and I can refer him to you. He is fantastic. I think he's the authority on coal equities here in the U.S., but coal's a fascinating play, so I'm glad that you brought that up. Let me ask you this, and it's impossible for me to have you on and not talk to you about India, and I know it's almost rhetorical to you, but I still want you to answer it. You're very critical of India the last couple of times I've had you on, rightfully so, and in fact, I have many thanks to you, because I was actually looking to invest in India, not that you took what you talked me down from it. I pulled the cover back a little bit more into a lot more due diligence, if you would. So I want to thank you for that. But, and also, I got a lot of hate from it, and you did too. So I fully expect that, and I really don't care. I want you to speak your mind here again, moving into the new year in the next 3 or 4 years with this Trump administration. Does India have any improvement in your mind? And if you would, economically, yeah, what's your view with your 30,000 foot view on India?
So, Andy, always remember, think through why you got so much hate from having me on your show. Because Indians hate truth. Now, I'm both perfectly fine if you challenge me, if you reason with me, but you can't start giving gang rape threats or start calling me anti-national or all those kind of things, which make absolutely no sense. Reason with me, reason with the audience, and that's where you are going to convince the audience that I'm wrong. But instead of reasoning, start giving threats and accusing people about things that they might or might not have done. So Indians have actually created a very bad reputation in the international situation, particularly on the streets over the last few years, because they behave irrationally, they are dysfunctional. And now you increasingly see that, at least in Australia and Canada, which have got a lot of Indian immigrants, and these are closer to an average immigrant, Indian immigrant, than the high class immigrants that America and Australia got one or two decades back. So you see, people are already starting to understand that Indians don't like truth, they don't like reason, they don't understand reason, they don't understand moral values, they are amoral people. And as a result, people, you get hate because they don't really have a rational and moral way to discuss with you. They don't really have the concept of discussion. They fight. If you look at a TV discussion happening in India and just randomly look for it, there's never a sane conversation. It is always people shouting at each other and crying, and it's very emotional. What is going to happen with India? The day Trump won the election, Indian currency fell 0.5% right away. And this tells you where India is going. India is going to suffer hugely over the next few years, and it will continue to fall apart because India is a completely dysfunctional country. Nothing happens here. No institution works in that country. The police is predatory. The judges are predatory. The politicians are predatory. They are all demagogues. They are all in there for their selfish interest. It is not just about bureaucracy. It's just corruption and predation. That's all you see in India, which makes investing in companies in India extremely torturous. I see no growth in those companies. And in fact, tens of billions of Indian money is leaving for Dubai, Singapore, and London because the big people know that there is no future in the country. In fact, if you look at one of the richest people on the planet, Adani, who is an Indian, he promised to invest $10 billion in the U.S. Now, why would he be investing $10 billion in the U.S. if India was such a good economy? And is that a way, is that a ploy of his to move money out of India? So overall, India will continue to fall apart. It will, I don't know where it will be 4 years from now. Will it still be a single country? I don't know, because it's so fragile, so brittle, so dysfunctional, and so predatory, where nothing works. And Indians don't really have the skills. And the next thing is artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is going to take away a lot of IT jobs, the back office cut and paste jobs that Indians have been doing. Now, you know, I live in San Francisco, Andy, and I tell you that a lot of Indians are known for doing this IT jobs. A lot of those are back office cut and paste jobs, low skilled jobs, and they actually still deliver low quality. So these jobs are going to go away, and they are actually going away. Last time I heard, 500,000 people got laid off in the IT sector over the last couple of years. So there will be huge problems in India over the next few years, and those problems will continue to worsen. Now, here is the issue, something that worries me about from American perspective. There are going to be three people who are likely to be pro-Indian for emotional reason rather than for rational reason in the cabinet of Trump. One is the vice president. Usha Vance is a practicing Hindu. Vivek Ramaswamy is a practicing Hindu. And Tulsi, who is, of course, an American, has no racial background from India, but is a practicing Hindu herself. All these three, in my view, are likely to have a pro-India stance, which means that they probably will have, at the same point time, an anti-China bias. This is just a guesswork, Andy. The problem is that religion, when your devotion comes you become irrational in your assessment of what is going to happen, what you think is the reality. Tulsi has been to India only once in her life, from what I know, and that was on the invitation of the Indian Prime Minister. I am told, and you know, again, this is not something I have read from different sources, but at least a well-known magazine in India printed an article about Tulsi's association with the right-wing fanatic Hindu organization called the RSS. Now, I actually like Tulsi. I have nothing against her because when you are so far away, you might be favoring a right-wing organization of another country because you don't know the nitty-gritties of those organizations. And I'm fine with Tulsi as such. But unfortunately, I see a pro-Indian emotional bias, which would be irrational, coming from these three people.
Yeah, and let me give a little bit of background to, I trace back a lot of, as much as I kid that hate, if you would, you also got a lot of love from Indian people that were very grateful for the way your logic was and the way your truth was, if you would. So it was actually, the hate was actually a minority, a very, very small minority, but they, it was a huge megaphone, if you would, because people that are angry, usually those are the ones that you hear. So I want to make sure that everybody knows that. Okay, so wrapping this up here, equities, is there any equities that are interesting right now in the natural resource space? That's my pretty much my audience, is that you'd want to mention or that are interesting to you or that you're looking at to possibly invest in?
Yes, so Andy, what I'm currently paying a lot of attention to is mergers happening in the sector. What happens with mergers is that because I have an arbitrage, I often protect my downside and actually still have the same upside in case the market goes up. So arbitrages are great ways to play in the frothy market because you significantly destroy the risk and still benefit from any upside. So let me talk about two arbitrage opportunities. A company called Bluestone Resources, the ticker is BSR in the Canadian exchange, is being acquired. And it is being acquired by Aura. And Aura is offering up its own share to acquire Bluestone Resources. And the share of Aura that Bluestone Resources will get will be worth about 29 cents. Bluestone is trading for 29 cents. So you get exactly what they are offering. But what you benefit from is that there is an offer of a 21.2 cent cash that will come to Bluestone Resources over the next few years once the project becomes operational.
Interesting.
Now, if I discount those 20 cents to today, and those cash will come risk-free to me. If I discount it to today at a 20% discount rate, it is worth about 6 or 7 cents in my pocket. So for an investment of 30 cents, I'm getting about 36 cents worth of value, which is about 20% upside for me. My cash will return back to me in January, so I'm just fine, even if this remaining cash gets stuck in the stock market for the next 3 years. So BSR at 29 cents, I think, gives me a good downside protection and a free upside of about as much as 100%, as much as 60%, actually, if things go fast. The other company is ALX Resources. The ticker is AL, also in the Canadian market. And on Friday, traded for 2 cents Canadian as well, but it often trades at 2.5 cents. It is being acquired, and the arbitrage at 2.5 cents is 37%. At 2 cents, the arbitrage upside would be about 50%. So the ticker is AL in the Canadian Stock Exchange.
Excellent. Jonathan, any final thoughts here? And where can people reach you and listen to you and find you if they want to do business with you or if they like their work, your work?
Well, I don't really do business with individuals. I only advise my institutional clients, and they are I have more on my plate than I can take at the moment. Everything I do goes on my website, which is jayantbhandari.com.
I'm going to link to that. And I just really want to thank you so much. I talked to Rick Rule about this, actually, that you gave me the, I was very wary of investing in places like Africa just because I saw Africa as too risky. And you made the comment to me, it was, Andy, I'm fine investing in Africa, risky jurisdictions, as long as I'm compensated for my risk. You told me that about a year ago, and I never forgot that. So I want to thank you for that piece of advice.
Yeah, thank you, Andy. And indeed, a lot of African countries can give me more return than the risk I undertake by investing there. And I invest in Africa. But again, I would advise anyone on I would at least alert them about being very careful about the so-called growth of India. I see no growth coming. I see deindustrialization happening. I see a huge social conflict increasing, which means that I actually want my risk profile of India is much, much higher than what market thinks it is. And I actually don't even see a return in that country. So be careful about which third world country it is. I wouldn't go to Congo. I wouldn't go to South Africa. But there are a lot of African countries and even Latin American countries which can offer you a good return on your investment.
Well, that's very well said, that usually a stock will be beaten down for a reason, and it used to want to invest in a stock or a jurisdiction because it's beaten down. There's got to be a reason and some kind of trigger that will make it go up, or it'll be changing. Something will change. Jayant, it's always a pleasure. I really, you become one of my favorite interviews. You really have. I really enjoy your thoughts and our discussion, and I just want to thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Andy.
All right. Take care.